Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 29, 2018. Members of the South Sudan People's Defense Force clean the streets of Juba Town.
When there is peace, the army is always to work for the people. I know they have done their job when they were fighting for the liberation of the country, but that liberation cannot be sustained unless there is work with it. And this is what we are doing.
And some South Sudanese say they still live in fear.
Seeing the war problem in South Sudan, you know, those people also, they're still scared. They're not even able also to cultivate their food. And that's why, you know, people are elevating them using the food aid system.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of members of the South Sudan People's Defense Force cleaned the streets of Juba on Saturday ahead of Wednesday's peace party. The exercise coincided with a civil society monthly campaign called Don't Just Be Youthful, Be Useful. Winnie Chirino took part in the weekend exercise and reports for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of soldiers clad in military uniforms pulled on gloves and face masks as they cleaned the streets of the capital. Instead of guns, they carried slashes, hose, pangas and poison bags for collecting trash around the airport, Juba Teaching Hospital and Juba Town. About 200 youth activists joined the soldiers in cleaning up areas around Freedom Hospital and Yakron Market. The teams were accompanied by a musical van to the John Garang Mausoleum. Major General Majir Deng led the soldiers in the effort to spruce up Juba streets before Wednesday's big event.
These are the dividends of peace. When there is peace, the army is always to work for the people. I know they have done their job when they were fighting for the liberation of the country, but that liberation cannot be sustained unless there is work with it. And this is what we are doing. And I think if the city council is ready, we are ready each Saturday to see into it that we work on this, because this is where nationalism is started.
Wani Michael, Executive Director for the National Youth Organization, OK Africa Foundation, says civil society groups are also running a monthly campaign called Nadafa Lebeledna, which in Arabic means cleaning our country. Michael says the campaign was in place long before this week's celebrations were scheduled.
We had planned earlier, but we also used the opportunity to celebrate the signing of the peace of the peace agreement, because it's still too early for me to celebrate peace, because I don't see any tangible implementation yet. We are not in the personal period, so I will be celebrating only the signing of the agreement. But I'm not celebrating peace because I have not seen yet the real peace.
Wani is calling on South Sudan's leaders to fully implement the peace agreement they signed last month without delay. Youth activist Kiden Zaida says she's helping to clean Juba streets as an example for other youth to keep the surrounding environment clean. And Zaida says she's happy to team up with soldiers.
We don't do that usually in South Sudan. So this is going to act as a bridge. People will realize that actually we can be friends with the soldiers. Apart from them going to the war, they can also participate in cleaning the environment. Apart from holding the gun and terrorizing people on the streets, we can actually work together to build the nation.
Emmanuel Tongun, director of the Dr. Phillips Pharmaceutical Company of Juba, says the company donated 3 cartons of gloves, 40 packets of face masks, and 10 rolls of plastic bags to collect garbage.
We're just giving back to the community, so there's no motive at all. We've been involved with the civil society since they started their program with the Nadafa Beledna, and we started off with the same donations because we know very well they're keeping up, doing their best to clean up the city with limited funding, so we've given them that extra boost.
Tongun praised youth activists who are helping to clean up the capital and says he hopes the campaign will be extended to other towns. Joseph Africano, Undersecretary in the Environment and Forestry Ministry, says his ministry will work with the Juba City Council to make South Sudan's capital one of the cleanest cities in Africa.
We would like to celebrate this peace while our city is clean. It's not going to be a one-time event, and the Ministry of Environment will be making sure that we collaborate with the City Council to see that South Sudan or Juba becomes one of the cleanest cities in Africa. We have to beat Kigali or Rwanda.
The cleanup exercise was a joint campaign between civil society groups, the Ministry of Defense, and the Juba City Council. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
As residents of Juba Town prepare for a peace party on Wednesday, some residents of Duma Village in former Upper Nile State say they still live in fear. The residents say they spent nearly 5 years hiding in the bush, and some gave varying account of life in rebel-controlled area. Some say they have little hope the revitalized peace deal signed in September will improve lives. Wake Simon Wudu recently traveled to the area on a World Food Programme-sponsored trip and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Nearly 40,000 residents of Duma are internally displaced persons who fled their homes in neighboring villages to escape repeated clashes between government and rebel forces during the nearly five-year conflict. Speaking in Arabic, 28-year-old Nyakuma Mayel, a mother of three, says living in the rebel-controlled area has not been easy during the conflict.
Life is hard since the conflict broke out. But because it is our place, there is no problem. We have been on the run throughout the year. Even giving birth could sometimes be on the road. Even conceiving could be on the road. Life has been very hard for us, especially for the women. Sometimes your husband will die on the battlefield.
Mayel says even though the revitalized peace agreement was signed by the warring parties, life for many IDPs remains difficult.
Did you get a vehicle there? Fighting reached here in Duma. When it reached here in Duma, there was a moment we stayed in a very hard life for 25 days. No water and nothing we could do.
Thousands of the IDPs queued to receive food aid from the UN World Food Program in Duma earlier this month. Speaking in Arabic, Olok Mokwach, a father of three, says the biggest challenge facing IDPs is a lack of food.
People are suffering because life is not like it used to be when we had not separated. One would survive in a traditional way. For example, in the past, we could fish, hunt for animals and birds. All these things which are in the bush can be hunted and eaten. There is no problem.
Many of the IDPs survive on the bit of food aid they receive combined with foraging for wild plants or hunting wild animals. They say it has not been safe to plant and harvest their own food like they used to do. People in the village depend on humanitarian aid.
Since the war broke out in South Sudan, you know, those people also, they're still scared. They're not even able also to cultivate their food. And that's why now people are helping them using the food aid system.
The revitalized peace deal requires all parties to cease hostilities. But Mayel says she is not convinced that the war has ended.
I can't believe. If this thing is true in days ahead, one will then have the message to say. But as things still continue like this, for us, we the women do still don't believe it.
Mokwach is optimistic things will turn around.
I am
very happy that the two leaders have signed a peace agreement. This peace agreement, may God make it a real peace, and it should enter to the hearts of our two leaders, President Kiir and Dr. Machar. They should agree well with President Bashir, an Ethiopian leader, because too much blood of children of South Sudan has been spilled.
For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The government of South Sudan opened today a modern, well-equipped passenger terminal at Juba International Airport. South Sudan's transport minister says the $14 million terminal serves domestic and international travelers. Some travelers say the new terminal will change the image of Juba's airport, which is often been described as one of the worst airports in the world. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Juba's International Airport Passenger Terminal 1 has a VIP lounge, a business lounge, and an economy class lounge. The facility has been under construction since 2016 by the private firm African Construction Company Limited, following a public-private partnership arrangement with the South Sudan government. Immigration officer Captain Ben Festo is getting up to speed on the new computers in the arrival terminal.
When the first passengers come, then we can scan them, we roll them, we capture the pictures from them and take the fingerprints. So we saved it to the data. And this information, it will go to database.
Festo says the new electronic system will make it much easier to process passengers, which immigration officers used to have to do manually. Passenger Lagu George says he is happy the government has built a new airport terminal. Subek Gabriel Data, the chief executive officer of the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, apologized to passengers for enduring the long wait to open the new terminal. John Luke, South Sudan's transport minister, says the airport will adhere to strict rules to ensure that the airport and its new terminal function according to international standards, which means no last-minute passengers are allowed to board planes.
If you are a VIP and you want to travel and to use the facilities you have seen before, if you are in a ministry or whatever organization you are in, you will have to give advance notice to those who will be in charge of these VIP lodges here in there. For our ambassadors and others, Ministry of Foreign Affairs is there. All must come through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Like we see in other countries where we go to. Don't just come and walk in and say, I'm VIP. You may be a minister. If John Luke comes in, walking in, I want to just go with my bag, I will be stopped.
South Sudan charges all passengers $30 in airport fees, which is used to help modernize the facility. South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga, who officially opened the new terminal today, says aviation officials must operate independently without interference from officials.
We must respect rule of law and we must respect orderliness. The airport staff currently are being harassed by some unruly guys, and this must come to a halt from today.
Iga acknowledges that South Sudan has not been paying its mandatory yearly International Civil Aviation Regional fees to bodies like the African Civil Aviation Commission and the Civil Aviation Safety Oversight Agency, which he says must be done. Iga urged the Ministry of Finance to set aside at least 30% of airport revenue for improving the security and cleanliness of the airport, which he says has not been done in the past. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The first Kenya Airways direct flight to the United States landed this morning at New York's JFK Airport. KQ-002 was greeted with a traditional water cannon blast for inaugural flights. The Boeing Dreamliner jet carried 234 passengers, including Kenyan Foreign Affairs Cabinet Secretary Monica Juma, Kenya Airways Chief Executive Sebastian Mukosi, and the U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Robert Kodik. The first direct flight took about 14 hours compared to 22 hours for the trips that required refueling stops or changing planes. The airline sees the direct flight as key expanding access to the U.S. market. It is part of Kenya's drive to expand tourism and business links with American companies. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a crackdown in Cameroon forces change in venue for rallies. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help young people discover their talents and develop them?
I think that can be done like from an early stage. Most of us right now are suffering and struggling with things because our parents didn't take the chance of getting to know our talents when we were very young. Because if a kid is young, you can easily tell what he or she is interested in.
I encourage you on how to develop your talent. If there is a need for money, and if I have, obviously I can give you.
What I can do is to inspire that young person to continue with that talent. And to develop them is to make sure that I continue working with that person.
Well, to me, I cannot help them in discovering, but whoever discovers himself, I can help in developing. And he has the will to develop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. People in Cameroon have created new ways of how to protest. Security forces in Cameroon have been cracking down on street protest after the October 7 re-election of President Paul Biya. To avoid beating and arrests, protesters have taken their message to safer places, even holy grounds such as schools and churches. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé. Opposition protesters sang on Monday in front of the University of Yaoundé in the capital of Cameroon. The lyrics said that opposition leader Maurice Kamto won the October 7 presidential election and that longtime president Paul Biya should hand over power. A massive deployment of police stopped the protesters from singing on the campus itself. 26-year-old teacher Boniface Onana says they will continue demonstrating against Biya's re-election. He says Biya should know that the time he was ruling Cameroon with an iron fist, using divide and conquer tactics, is over. Onana says Cameroonians should know that a new nation with a new leader has been born, and he will do everything possible to pass on the message. Police say they detained four of the protesters and are investigating others who ran onto the university grounds disguised as students. Opposition supporters are seeking safe areas to protest as Cameroon security forces have been cracking down on street rallies since the election. Tens of protesters on Sunday entered the Our Lady of Victory's Cathedral in Yaoundé, interrupting a service to sing that Biya should hand over power. Sustain Liport is the information officer for Kamto's Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party. He says they took their protest to the university and the church because of the crackdown.
Il y a deux guerres que lui-même a déclarées et aucune n'est encore achevée. Maurice Kamto a fait la promesse.
He says the military should know that Biya has not even won wars. He declared on two fronts, against Boko Haram and against separatists, fighting for the creation of an English-speaking state. Yet, he is sending his military to attack innocent people who are simply protesting for their rights. Archbishop Jean Barga condemned the protesters who entered the church, calling it a desecration of the religious body.
L'archidiocèse de Yaoundé exprime par ma voix sa profonde indignation.
He says the Yaoundé Archdiocese is scandalized at the disrespect that some politicians have shown towards the church. He says the church is apolitical and should never be used for any political activity, reason why he totally condemns such acts that are instilling doubt in the minds of Christians as to the neutrality of the Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church in Cameroon has issued conflicting comments on the presidential election. Mbarga on Sunday saluted Biya as the winner, while the head of the National Catholic Bishops' Conference expressed suspicion at the official results. Officials said Biya won the election with 71% of the vote. Kamto, his main challenger, received 14%. Opposition parties accused Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM party, of massive electoral fraud. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé. From Yaoundé, we move to Harare, where President Emmerson Mnangagwa met with business leaders Monday in an effort to assure the public his government can still stabilize the sinking economy. But as one business leader explains, uncertainty about the cash supply and the currency in use makes it hard for the economy to function. Columbus Mavunga has more for VOA from Harare.
Addressing business executives at the State House, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said his government was working day and night to stabilize the economy. Zimbabweans are dealing with an acute shortage of most essentials, including medical drugs, fuel, cooking oil, and clean drinking water. Prices have been rising, though not at the same rate as in 2008, when the official annual inflation rate reached 231 million percent. Mnangagwa asked businesses to fix the shortages by bringing more products to market.
I am advised that some manufacturers have been holding back products from retailers. This, if it is true, it is regrettable. The fear to lose wealth and savings as happened during the 2008 economic meltdown is currently but unnecessary. I greatly appreciate and understand all your concerns and anxieties.
The president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Sifelani Jabangwe, told VOA if any companies are holding back goods, it is because they know getting resupplied will be impossible.
The reality is, if for instance, if the rates are moving and there's no currency coming and then a manufacturer knows that the last stock of the goods that they are holding is the last of it, if they sell that and they lose out, they are finished and we've lost that company. So if there's anyone who's been holding any product, it's probably been because they're waiting to understand what they're doing. But I don't think there are many companies that are doing that. A lot of companies that actually run out of raw materials.
The heart of the issue is lack of usable cash. Since Zimbabwe abandoned its own dollar in 2009, the country has mostly used US dollars, the British pound, and South African rand to contact businesses. But in recent years, all the three currencies have been hard to find, paralyzing the economy and forcing the country to rely on bond notes, a currency the government began printing 2 years ago to ease cash shortages. Monday, President Mnangagwa said the multi-currency system of exchange is here to stay. He said people's bank balances are safe and there is no reason for people to spend or move their savings. But the value of the bond note is unquestionably falling. The government insists its currency trade on par with the US dollar. On the black market, however, a dollar is now worth close to 4 bond notes. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Still on business, human capital development is critical for the growth of the creative sector, which has potential to generate much-needed jobs and contribute to Africa's GDP. Against this background, one of the continent's corporate giants, MultiChoice Africa, launched the MultiChoice Talent Factory Academy initiative in 3 African countries, that's Kenya, Nigeria, and Zambia, recently, with the launch last week. VOA correspondent Adi Gondo has more on that story.
The Southern Africa Regional Talent Factory launch event was held last week in Lusaka, Zambia, which is the regional host nation. Ranging in age from 20 to 27 years of age and spread across 3 regional academies, 60 very well-deserving, passionate young filmmakers came through a rigorous process out of 3,108 submissions. 13 panels across the continent oversaw the interviews and final determination of successful candidates who won all-expenses-paid 12-month training in different aspects of filmmaking. 20 students were recruited from Angola, Botswana, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Zambia's Minister of Information, Dora Silia, officially opened the Film Training Academy. She expressed the government's commitment to playing a catalytic role in the sector and a desire to see increased private-public sector partnership in development initiatives.
We in government want to do our part as well, and this is why we are putting together a film policy that should be able to provide clarity for all those in the sector. As a country, we want to encourage public-private sector participation in the film industry. We do know that in the last 3 years, MultiChoice Zambia, through Zambezi Magic, has been working with a number of local talent, local producers, local actors. They've been commissioning and licensing local works which are being shown on Zambezi Magic, on DSTV and GoTV.
Some observers say that the company, faced with growing competition from online content distribution giants such as Netflix, iFlix, and African player Quasar Television, may mainly be seeking to solidify its African footprint. However, upskilling of film production personnel is one of the foundational requirements for the film industry's growth, and the new initiative by MultiChoice Africa, a digital satellite television network, is part of the solution. The Film Academy's Africa Director, Cheryl Ayes Ali, on a company's motivation for the Film Training Academy.
It's our product. It's in our DNA. Content, filmmaking, video entertainment. Currently, we are in 49 countries across the continent, and I think that speaks for itself, giving them the opportunity to increase their skills, to learn from experts, to learn from others in the industry. And we're growing talent. We're growing young talent to grow our film economies.
Barry Luando, who is the Southern Africa Regional Director for the Talent Factory Academy, weighs in on the role of filmmaking in African storytelling.
When you look at storytelling and you combine that with the cinematic tradition, which we do not have, and that's what this intervention is. It's about the development of the cinematic tradition. Okay. It's dynamizing the human capital. It's about reigniting the creative juices. It's about telling people stories, the stories the only best way we know how. And it's us, incidentally, telling our own stories, which is a huge shift from where we get somebody to tell stories about us in their eyes. So the stereotypes come in, different things come in.
The training opportunity is a golden one for Africa's young creatives. One of the successful candidates, Emmanuel Gonsalves from Angola, expresses his joy and hopes for the future.
I feel very happy for being selected and special at the same time because I don't think I'm going to get this opportunity ever again. So I promise to give my best and change the industry in Africa. After this program, I'm expecting to actually get relevant contribution to the so that we can be exposed, because right now we're kind of faded. Ain't nobody there exposing what we're currently doing. So
the film sector in Africa is a fledgling one, with the notable exception of South Africa and Nigeria's Nollywood. According to a June 2016 article by Steve Omanufeme on the International Monetary Fund's website, Nigeria's Nollywood currently accounts for 853.9 billion naira, which is US 7.2 billion, or 1.42% of Nigeria's GDP. It employs a million people directly or indirectly and is lauded as the country's second biggest source of jobs after agriculture. It is also considered one of the major planks on which to diversify the Nigerian economy. MultiChoice's corporate social investment in the academies is commendable, but national governments within the region are yet to fully embrace the potential for the film sector to create economic value. Observers say that given the existential threat posed by imports of cheap Asian goods to African economies, the creative sector is perhaps one of few areas of African competitive advantage aside from tourism. Indeed, they say that African governments need to prioritize the film industry. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Abie by the group known as Abie Jazz Band. We have been listening to Abie Jazz Band with that song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also get us on Twitter. Our handle is at VOA South Sudan. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.